shorts but no shirt. He comes over and plunks down on the bed, looking at me somberly.
Did you know that the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up?
I nod. A long time ago. They have perfected things much more now.
I'd be ground crew at NASA, not on the shuttle. I don't want to die ever.
I find myself wanting to hug him.
Me neither, George. Is Jace already going to marry you?
I start coughing again. No, George, I'm only 17. As if that's the only reason we aren't engaged.
I'm this many.
George holds up 4 slightly grubby fingers.
But Jace is 17 and a half. You could. Then you could live in here with him and have a big family.
Jace strides back into the room, of course, midway through this proposition.
George, beat it. Discovery Channel is on.
George backs out of the room, but not before saying,
His bed's really comfortable, and he never pees in it.
The door closes and we both start laughing.
Oh, Jesus.
Jace, now clad in a different green t-shirt and pair of navy running shorts, sits down on the bed. His hair is wavier when wet, and little drops of water drip onto his shoulders. It's okay, I love him, I say. I think I will marry him.
You might want to think about that, or at least be really careful about the bedtime reading.
He smiles lazily at me. I need to get out of this guy's room, fast. I stand up, start to cross the room, then notice a picture of a girl stuck on the mirror over the bureau. I walk closer to take a look. She has curly black hair and a ponytail and a serious expression. She's also quite pretty.
Who's this?
My ex-girlfriend, Lindy. She had the sticker made at the mall. Now I can't get it off.
Why ex? Why am I asking this?
She got to be too dangerous, Jace says. You know, now that I think of it, I guess I could put another sticker on top of it.
You could. I lean closer to the mirror, examining her perfect features. Define dangerous.
She shoplifted a lot, and she only ever wanted to go to the mall on dates. Hard not to look like an accomplice. Not my favorite way to spend an evening doing time, waiting to get bailed out.
My sister shoplifted too, I say, as though this is some nifty thing we have in common.
Ever take you along?
No, thank God. I'd die if I got in trouble. Jace looks at me intently, as though what I've said is profound.
No, you wouldn't, Samantha. You wouldn't die. You'd just be in trouble, and then you'd move on.
He's standing behind me, too close again. He smells like minty shampoo and clean, clean skin. Apparently, any distance at all is too close.
Yeah, well, I do have to move on, home. I have stuff to do.
You sure?
I nod vigorously. Just as we get to the kitchen, the screen door slams and Mr. Garrett comes in, followed by a small boy. Small, but bigger than George. Duff? Harry? Like everyone else in the family, up till now, I've only seen Jace's father from a distance. Close up, he looks younger, taller, with the kind of charisma that makes the room feel full just because he's in it. His hair is the same wavy, deep brown as Jace's, but shot with gray, rather than blonde streaks. George runs over and attaches himself to his dad's leg. Mrs. Garrett steps back from the sink to smile at him. She lights up the way I've seen girls at school do, sighting their crushes across crowded rooms.
Jack, you're home early.
We hit the 3-hour mark at the store with no one coming in.
Mr. Garrett brushes a strand of her hair away from her face, tucking it behind her ear.
I decided my time would be better spent getting in some more training with Jace, so I scooped up Harry from his playdate and came on home.
I get to run the stopwatch! I get to run the stopwatch!
Harry shouts.
My turn! Daddy, it's my turn!
George's face crumples.
You can't even read the numbers, Harry says. No matter how fast or slow he runs, you always say it's been 11 minutes. It's my turn.
I brought home an extra stopwatch from the store, Mr. Garrett says. You up for it, Jason?
He has Samantha over, Mrs. Garrett begins, but I interrupt. I was just leaving. Mr. Garrett turns to me.
Well, hello, Samantha.
His big hand envelops mine, and he looks at me intently, then grins.
So, you're the mysterious girl next door.
I glance quickly at Jace, but his face is inscrutable. I am from next door, but no real mystery going on there.
Well, it's good to catch a closer look. I didn't know Jace had... I'm going to walk her out, Dad. Then I'll get ready to lift. That's what I'm doing first today, right?
As we head out the kitchen door, Mrs. Garrett urges me to visit any time.
I'm glad you came over,
Jace says when we reach the end of the driveway.
Sorry again about George.
I like George. What are you training for?
Football season. I'm cornerback this year. Maybe a shot at a scholarship, which, gotta say, would be a good thing.
I stand there in the heat, squinting into the sun, wondering what to say next, how to make a good exit or any exit, and why I'm bothering to make one when Mom won't be home for hours. I take a step backward, land on a plastic shovel, stumble. Jace's hand shoots out.
Easy there.
Right. Oopsie. Well, goodbye. After giving a quick, agitated wave, I hurry home. Oopsie. God, Samantha. Chapter 6. Flip and Tracy come home sunburned and rumpled, with fried clams and birch beer and foot-long hot dogs from the clam shack. They lay it all out on the kitchen island, stopping to grab each other around the waist, pinch each other's asses, kiss each other's ears. I wish I'd stayed longer at the Garrett. Why didn't I? Tim must still have custody of Nan's cell, because this is what I get when I call.
Listen, Heidi, it's really not a good idea for us to hang out together again.
It's Samantha. Where's Nan?
Oh, for Christ's sake. You do know you're not Siamese twins, right? Why do you keep asking me this shit?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you keep answering her cell. Is she home?
I think so. Probably. Or not,
Tim says. I hang up. The landline is busy and the Masons don't have call waiting. Just an electronic way to be rude, according to Mrs. Mason. So I decide to bike to Nan's house. Tracy and Flip have moved to the living room couch, and there's much giggling and murmuring. As I get to the hallway, I hear Flip whisper, all urgent.
Oh, baby, what you do to me.
Gag. You make me feel so good inside, I sing back.
Beat it, calls Tracy.
It's high tide and hot, which means the salty smell of the Sound is especially strong, nearly overcoming the marshy scent of the river. The two sides of town. I love them both. I love how you can tell the season and the time of day just by closing your eyes and taking a deep breath. I shut my eyes now, inhaling the thick, warm air, then hear a startled screech, and look just in time to swerve around a woman wearing a pink visor and socks under her sandals. Stony Bay's on a little peninsula at the mouth of the Connecticut River. We have a wide harbor, so tourists like our town. It's 3 times as crowded in the summer, so I guess I should have known better than to bike with my eyes closed. Nan opens the door when I knock, house phone to her ear. She smiles, then puts her index finger to her lips, jerking her chin toward the living room as she says into the phone,
Well, you are my first choice, so I really want to get a jump on the application.
I always have the same feeling when I walk through the Mason's front door. There are happy-faced Hummel figurines all over the place, and little wall plaques with Irish blessings on them, and doilies sprinkled on top of all the armchairs and even the television. When you go to the bathroom, the toilet paper is hidden underneath the puffy pink crocheted hoop skirt of a blank-eyed doll. No books in the bookshelves, just more figurines and photographs of Nan and Tim, very twinnish in their early years. I study them for the millionth time as Nan spells out her address. Baby Nan and Tim, dressed as Santa and Mrs. Claus. Toddler Nan and Tim, fluffy-haired and round-eyed as chicks for Easter. Preschool Nan and Tim in a dirndl and lederhosen. The pictures stop abruptly when they turn about 8. If I remember correctly, they were dressed as Uncle Sam and Betsy Ross for the 4th of July that year, and Tim bit the photographer. In the pictures, they look much more alike than they do now. They're both red-headed and freckled. But because life is unfair, Nan's hair is a pale, washed-out strawberry blonde, and she has freckles everywhere and blonde eyelashes. Tim's got only a few stipples of freckles across his nose, and his brows and lashes are dark, while his hair is a deep russet. He'd be a knockout if he weren't always so out of it.
"I'm on hold with Columbia, getting my application," Nan whispers. "I'm glad you came by. I've been totally sidetracked."
"I called your cell, but got Tim, and he wouldn't look for you."
"That's where it is. God, he's used up all his minutes, and now he's after mine. I'm going to kill him."
"Couldn't you just go to Columbia's website and order the application?" I whisper, even though I know the answer. Nan's hopeless with her computer. She keeps so many windows open at the same time and never shuts them. Her laptop's constantly crashing.
"My laptop's in surgery with Macho Mitch again."
Mitch is the incredibly good-looking, if vaguely sinister, computer repair guy who makes house calls on Nan's PC. Nan thinks he looks like Steve McQueen, her idol. I think he looks sulky and annoyed because he's constantly fixing the same problems.
"Thanks. Yes, and when will this be sent out?" Nan says into the phone, just as Tim wanders into the room, hair sticking up in all directions,
wearing a ratty pair of tartan flannel PJ bottoms and an Ellery Prep lacrosse T-shirt. He doesn't look at us, just roams over to the Hummel Noah's Ark display on the window seat and rearranges the figures in obscene combinations. He's just finished putting Mrs. Noah and a camel into a compromising and anatomically difficult position when Nan hangs up.
"I keep meaning to call you," she says. "When do you start lifeguarding? I'll be at the gift shop starting next week."
"Me too." Tim yawns loudly, scratches his chest, and places a couple of monkeys and a rhino in an unlikely threesome. I can smell him from where I sit. Weed and beer.
"You could at least say hi to Samantha, Timmy."
"Hey, kid. I feel as if we spoke only a few brief moments ago." "Oh, that's right, we did. Sorry, don't know where the fuck my manners are. They haven't been the same since they shrunk at the dry cleaner. Want some?"
He pulls a vial of Visine from his back pocket and offers it to me.
"Thanks, no, I'm trying to cut down," I say.
Tim's gray eyes are in need of the Visine. I hate it, watching someone smart and perceptive spend all their time getting blurry and stupid. He collapses on his back on the couch with a groan, draping one hand over his eyes. It's hard to remember what he was like before he started auditioning for Betty Ford. When we were little, our family spent a lot of summer weekends together at Stony Bay Beach. Back then, I was actually closer to Tim than Nan. Nan and Tracy would read and sunbathe, dabble their toes in the water, but Tim was never afraid to wade out and pull me with him into the biggest waves. He was also the one who discovered the riptide in the creek, the one that zoomed you down and whipped you out to sea.
"So, babe, getting any these days?"
He wiggles his eyebrows at me from his supine position.
"Charlie was going nuts because you wouldn't go for his nuts, if you know what I mean."
"Hilarious, Timmy. You can stop talking now," Nan says.
"No, really. It's a good thing you broke up with Charlie, Samantha. He was an asshole. I'm not friends with him anymore either because, strangely enough, he thought I was the asshole."
"Hard to imagine," Nan says. "Timmy, just go to bed. Mommy will be home soon, and she's not going to keep buying that you took too much Benadryl because of your allergies. She knows you don't have allergies."
"I do so,"
Tim says loudly, all out of proportion indignant. He pulls a joint out of the front pocket of his shirt and waves it at her triumphantly.
"I'm allergic to weeds."
Then he bursts out laughing. Nan and I exchange a look. Tim is usually stoned and drunk, but there's a nervous, jacked-up energy about him now that hints at harder stuff. "Let's get out of here," I say. "Walk downtown." She nods.
"How about Doan's? I need some chocolate malt ice cream."
She grabs her purse from a puffy, flowered chair and leans over, giving Tim, who is still chuckling, a shake.
"Go upstairs," she says. "Now, before you fall asleep."
"I'm not gonna fall asleep, sis. I'm just resting my eyes," Tim mumbles.
Nan nudges his shoulder again. As she moves away, he grabs her purse so she jerks to a stop.
Nano, sis. Nan, kid, I need something, he says urgently, his face all desperate.
She raises a pale eyebrow at him.
A shitload of jelly beans from Doan's, okay? But no green ones. They scare me.
Chapter 7. On the porch, I grab Nan's hand, squeeze it.
I know, she says. It's so much worse since he got kicked out of Ellery. He spends all day like this, and God knows what he does at night. My parents are completely and totally without a clue. Mommy buys all his lies. Oh, that's catnip in that bag, Ma. Oh, those pills? Aspirin. That white stuff? Just salt. Then she busts him for swearing, by making him put money in the swear box. He just swipes more from my purse. And Daddy? Well, she shrugs.
Mrs. Mason is the most relentlessly cheerful person I've ever met. All her sentences begin with exclamations.
So, my, well, goodness.
By contrast, Mr. Mason rarely says anything at all. When we were little, I had this wind-up toy, a plastic chick from an Easter basket, and I thought of him sort of like that. He remained virtually unmoving in a plaid armchair from the moment he got home till dinner, then resumed his position after dinner until bedtime, wound up only long enough to get to and from work and to and from the table.
He's even got Tim's pot plant in with his own plants, giving it miracle grow. What kind of man was young in the 80s and doesn't recognize marijuana?
She's laughing, but her voice has a hysterical note.
It's like Tim's drowning, and they're worried about the color of his swimsuit.
And you can't tell them? I ask, not for the first or second or hundredth time. Although, who am I to talk? I didn't exactly fess up to Mom about Tim either. Nan laughs, but doesn't really answer.
This morning, when I came down to breakfast, Daddy was saying maybe Tim needed military school to make a man out of him, or a stint in the army. Can you imagine? You just know he'd be that soldier who got his superior officers so angry they'd stick him in some horrible underground cave and forget he existed, or ticked off the campus bully and got himself beaten to death, or got into trouble with some drill sergeant's wife and then shot in the back by her enraged husband.
Good thing you haven't spent much time worrying about the possibilities, I say. Nan loops an arm around my shoulder.
I've missed you, Samantha. I'm sorry, I've been all caught up in Daniel, going to his graduation parties, just staying away from home, really.
What's going on there? I can tell she's dying to get into it, get away from the Tim drama.
Daniel, she sighs. Maybe I should stick to crushing on Macho Mitch and Steve McQueen. I can't figure out what's going on with him. He's all tense and wigged out about going to MIT. But you know how brilliant he is, and school doesn't start for 3 months anyway. I mean, it's June. Can't he just relax?
Right. I nudge her with my shoulder. Because you know all about that, girl who orders college catalogs the millisecond after junior year ends.
That's why he and I are a perfect match, right? She says with a little grimace.
A breeze comes up as we turn down Main Street, shaking the leaves and the maples that line the road so they make a soft sighing sound. The air smells lush and green, briny from the sound. As we near the dark and stormy, the local dive bar hamburger joint, two figures emerge from the door, blinking a little in the bright sun. Clay, and a very pretty brunette woman in a designer suit. I stop, my attention caught, and he gives her a big smile, then leans forward to kiss her, on the lips, with a little back rubbing thrown in. I'd expected to see more of Clay Tucker, but not like this.
What is it, Samantha? Nan asks, pulling at my arm.
What's going on? It wasn't a French kiss, but it was definitely not a she's my sister kiss.
That's my mom's new boyfriend.
Now Clay squeezes the woman's shoulder and winks, still smiling.
Your mom has a boyfriend? You're kidding. When did that happen?
The woman laughs and brushes Clay's sleeve. Nan glances at me, wincing. I don't know when they met. It seems sort of serious. I mean, it looked like it on my mom's end.
Now the brunette, whom I notice is at least a decade younger than Mom, opens up a briefcase and hands Clay a manila folder. He tilts his head at her in a you're-the-best way.
"Is he married, do you know?" Nan asks in a hushed voice.
It suddenly occurs to me that we're standing still on the sidewalk, quite obviously staring. Just then, Clay looks over and sights us. He waves at me, seemingly unabashed. "If you cheat on my mother," I think, then let the thought trail off, because, in all honesty, what'll I do?
"She's probably just a friend," Nan offers unconvincingly.
"Come on, let's get that ice cream." I give Clay one last look, hopefully conveying imminent harm to treasured body parts if he's cheating on my mom. Then I follow Nan. What else can I do? I try to erase Clay from my mind, at least until I can get home and think. Nan doesn't bring it up again, thank God. I'm relieved when we get to Doan's. It's in this little salt box building near the pier, which divides the mouth of the river from the ocean. Doan's was the penny candy store back when there was such a thing as penny candy. Now its big draw is Vargas, the candy corn-pecking chicken, a moth-eaten fake chicken with real feathers, for which you have to pay a quarter to activate his frantic OCD pecking of ancient candy corn. For some reason, this is a big tourist draw, along with Doan's soft ice cream, taffy, and good view of the lighthouse. Nan scrounges through her wallet.
"Samantha, I had $20. Now I've got nothing. I'm going to kill my brother."
"Doesn't matter," I tell her, leafing a few bills from my pocket.
"I'll pay you back," Nan tells me, taking the cash.
"It's no problem, Nanny. So you want the ice cream?"
"Eventually. So anyway, Daniel took me to New Haven to see a movie last night. I thought we had a great time, but he's only texted once today, and all he said was L-V-Y-A instead of spelling it all the way out. What do you think that means?"
Daniel's always been inscrutable to me. He's the kind of smart that makes you feel stupid.
Maybe he was in a hurry. "With me? If you're going to take time, shouldn't it be with your girlfriend?"
Nan's filling her plastic bag with root beer barrels and gummy bears and chocolate-covered malt balls. Sugar rush retail therapy. I don't know quite what to say. Finally, without looking at her, I just blurt out what I've thought for a while.
"Daniel seems like he always makes you nervous. Is that okay?"
Nan's now contemplating Vargas, who seems to be in the midst of an epileptic fit. He's no longer pecking the candy corn, just kind of throbbing back and forth.
"I wouldn't know," she says finally. "Daniel's my first real boyfriend. You had Charlie and Michael, and even Taylor Oliveira back in eighth grade."
"Taylor doesn't count. We kissed once."
"And he told everyone you'd gone all the way,"
Nan says, as if this proves her point. "Right, I'd forgotten that. What a prince. He was the love of my life, it's true. How was the movie with Daniel?" Vargas twitches more and more slowly, then shudders to a stop.
"The movie?" Nan says vaguely. "Oh, right, The Sorrow and the Pity. Well, it was fine for a 3-hour black-and-white movie about Nazis, but then afterward we went to this coffee house, and there were some Yale grad students there. Daniel suddenly got completely pretentious and started using words like tautological and subtext." I laugh. Although it was Daniel's brains that drew Nan, his pompous streak is a recurring theme. "I finally had to haul him out to the car and get him kissing me so he'd stop talking." Before the word kissing is out of her mouth, I'm picturing Jace Garrett's lips. Nice lips. Full lower lip, but not pouty or sulky. I turn to look at Nan. She's bent over the jelly beans, her fine strawberry hair tucked behind one ear, a ragged fingernail in her mouth. Her nose is a little sunburned, peeling, and her freckles darker than they were last week. I open my mouth to tell her I met this boy, but can't quite say the words. Even Nan never knew I watched the Garretts. It isn't exactly that I kept it from her. I just never brought it up.
Besides, I met this boy. That story could go anywhere, or nowhere at all. I turn back to the candy.
What do you think? Nan asks. Do we get Tim his jelly beans? You're the one with the cash.
Yes, let's get him, but only the scary green ones. Nan closes the top of her bag with a loud crumble.
Samantha, what are we going to do about him?
I scoop a clattering cascade of green apple jelly bellies into the white paper bag and remember when we were 7. I got stung by a jellyfish. Tim cried because his mother and mine wouldn't let him pee on my leg, which he'd heard was an antidote to the sting.
But Ma, I have the power to save her, he'd sobbed.
That was a joke between us for years. Don't forget, I have the power to save you. Now, he can't even seem to save himself. Beyond hoping these are magic beans, I say, I have no idea. Chapter 8. The next afternoon, I'm kicking off my work shoes on our porch, preparing to go in to change, when I hear Mrs. Garrett.
Samantha, could you come here for a second?
She's standing at the end of our driveway holding Patsy. George is next to her, in only boxers. Farther up the driveway, Harry's lurking behind a wagon, with one of those nozzles that attach to a garden hose in his hand, evidently playing sniper. As I get up close, I see that she's again breastfeeding Patsy. She gives me her wide-open smile and says,
"Oh, Samantha, I was just wondering. Jace was telling me how great you were with George, and I wondered if you ever..."
She stopped suddenly, looking more closely at me, her eyes widening. I look down. Oh, the uniform. It's my work outfit. My boss designed it. I don't know why I always add this, except to establish that otherwise there's no way in hell I'd be caught dead in a blue miniskirt and a midi shirt.
"A man, I assume," Mrs. Garrett says dryly.
I nod.
"Naturally. Anyway," she begins talking in a rush, "I wondered if you might ever be interested in doing some babysitting. Jace didn't want me to ask you. He was afraid you'd think that he lured unsuspecting girls into our house so that I could exploit them for my own needs, like some desperate mom version of white slavery."
I laugh. "I didn't think that."
"Of course you wouldn't," she grins at me again. "I know everyone must believe I do that. Ask every girl I see if they babysit, but I don't. Very few people are good with George straight off, and Jace said you got him right away. I can use the older children, of course, but I hate making them feel as though I expect it. Alice, for example, always acts as though it's a huge burden."
She's talking fast, as though she's nervous.
"Jace never minds, but his job at the hardware store and his training take most of his time, so he's gone a lot, except one afternoon a week and, of course, part of the weekend. Anyway, I only need a few hours here and there."
"It would be fine," I say. "I don't have much experience, but I learn fast and I'd be happy to babysit. As long as you don't tell my mother." Mrs. Garrett gives me a grateful look, then pulls Patsy off one breast and, after reaching up to unsnap something, moves her to the other. Patsy wails in protest. Mrs. Garrett rolls her eyes. "She only likes one side," she confides. "Very uncomfortable." I nod again, though I have no idea why that would be. Thanks to my mother's comprehensive "your body is changing" talk, I'm clear on sex and pregnancy, but still hazy on the nursing end. Thank God. At this point, George interjects.
"Did you know that if you drop a penny off the top of the Empire State Building, you could kill someone?"
"I did know, but that never happens," I say quickly, "because people on the observation deck are really, really careful, and there's a big plastic wall." Mrs. Garrett shakes her head.
"Jace is right. You're a natural."
I feel a glow of pleasure that Jace thought I did anything well.
"Anyway," she continues, "could you do one or maybe 2 times a week, in the afternoon if that works with your summer job?"
I agree, tell her my schedule, even before she offers me more than I make at breakfast ahoy. Then she asks, again looking a little self-conscious, if I would mind starting today.
Of course not. Just let me change.
Don't change.
George reaches out to touch my skirt with a grubby finger.
I like that. You look like Sailor Supergirl.
More like Sailor Barbie, I'm afraid, George. I have to change because I worked in this all morning, and it smells like eggs and bacon.
I like eggs and bacon, George tells me. But,
his face clouds,
did you know that bacon is...
Tears leap to his eyes.
Wilbur?
Mrs. Garrett sits down next to him immediately.
George, we've been through this, remember? Wilbur did not get made into bacon.
That's right. I bend down too as wetness overflows George's lashes. Charlotte the spider saved him. He lived a long and happy life with Charlotte's daughters, Nellie and Urania and...
Joy,
Mrs. Garrett concludes. You, Samantha, are a keeper. I hope you don't shoplift. I start to cough.
No, never.
Then is bacon Babe, Mom? Is it Babe?
No, no, Babe's still herding sheep. Bacon is not Babe. Bacon is only made from really mean pigs, George.
Mrs. Garrett strokes his hair, then brushes his tears away. Bad pigs, I clarify.
They're bad pigs?
George looks nervous.
Oops.
Well, pigs with, no soul. That doesn't sound good either. I cast around for a good explanation. Like the animals that don't talk in Narnia.
Dumb.
George is 4. Would he know Narnia yet? He's still at Curious George. Edited. But understanding lights his face.
Oh, that's okay then. 'Cause I really like bacon.
When I return, George is already standing in the inflatable pool while Harry sprays water into it. Mrs. Garrett efficiently removes Patsy's diaper, pulling on some sort of puffy plastic pants with little suns all over them.
You haven't really met Harry. Harry, this is Jace's friend Samantha, who's going to be watching you for a while.
How did I get to be Jace's friend? I've talked to him twice. Wow, is Mrs. Garrett ever different from my mother? Harry, who's got green eyes but fairly straight dark brown hair and lots of freckles, looks at me challengingly.
Can you do a back dive?
Yes.
Will you teach me right now?
Mrs. Garrett interrupts.
Harry, we discussed this. Samantha can't take you in the big pool because she has to keep her eye on the little ones.
Harry's lower lip juts out.
She could put Patsy in the baby Bjorn like you do and go in the water. She could hold George's hand. He can swim pretty good with his swimmies.
Mrs. Garrett glances at me apologetically.
My children expect everyone to multitask to an extreme degree. Harry, no, it's this pool or nothing.
But I can swim now. I can swim really good. And she knows how to back dive. She could teach me to back dive.
While wearing the baby and holding George's hand? I'd need to be Sailor Supergirl.
No,
Mrs. Garrett repeats firmly. Then to me, a will of iron. Just keep saying no. Eventually he'll move on. She takes me back into the house, shows me where the diapers are, tells me to help myself to anything in the refrigerator, gives me her cell phone number, points out the list of emergency numbers, cautions me not to bring up the subject of tornadoes in front of George, hops into her van, and drives off, leaving me with Patsy, who's trying to pull up my shirt, George, who wants me to know that you should never touch a blue-ringed octopus, and Harry, who looks like he wants to kill me. Actually, it doesn't go that badly. I've mostly avoided babysitting. It's not that I don't like kids, but I hate the uncertain hours of it. I've never wanted to deal with parents arriving late and apologetic, or that awkward drive home with some dad trying to make small talk. But the Garrett kids are pretty easy. I take them over to our house so I can get our garden sprinkler, which is this complicated standing copper twirling thing. Harry, fortunately, thinks it's amazing, and he and George spend an hour and a half playing in it, then jumping back into the baby pool, while Patsy sits in my lap, gnawing my thumb with her gums and drooling on my hand.
I finish doing the snack thing and am herding the kids back out to the pool when the motorcycle pulls in. I turn with a tingle of anticipation, but it's not Jace. It's Joel, who gets off the motorcycle, leans against it, and does that whole slow, appreciative scan of your entire body thing, which I get quite enough of at breakfast ahoy.
"George, Harry, who've you brought home?" Joel says.
He is good-looking, but a little too much on the and-well-he-knows-it end of the scale.
"This is Sailor Supergirl," George says. "She knows all about black holes."
"And back dives," Harry adds.
"But you can't have her because she's going to marry Chase," George concludes.
"Wonderful." Joel looks surprised, as well he might.
"You're a friend of Jace's?"
"Well, not really. I mean, we just met. I'm here to babysit."
"But you went to his room," George adds.
Joel raises an eyebrow at me, again with a full body blush, all too apparent in a bikini. "I'm just the babysitter." George grabs me around the waist, kissing my belly button.
"No, you're Sailor Supergirl."
"So, where did you come from?"
Joel folds his arms, slanting back against the motorcycle. George and Harry run back into the copper sprinkler. I'm holding Patsy on one hip, but she keeps trying to pull off my bikini top.
"Move her to the other side,"
Joel suggests without batting an eyelash. Oh, right. Patsy, the baby with the one breast preference.
"You were saying?"
Joel's still leaning lazily back against the motorcycle. "Next door. I came from next door."
"You're Tracy Reed's sister?"
Of course. Naturally, he would not have overlooked Tracy. While I'm blonde, Tracy is a blonde. That is, I'm straw and sort of honey-colored with freckles from Dad, while Tracy's tow-headed with pale skin. She, unfairly, looks like she's never seen the sun, although she spends most of her summers on the beach. "Yep." Then suddenly, I wonder if my sister, too, has secretly interacted with the Garretts. But Joel isn't blonde, Tracy's chief boyfriend requirement, right up there with a good backhand, so probably not. Just to be sure, I ask, "Do you play tennis?" Joel looks unfazed by this non sequitur, no doubt used to fluster girls making no sense.
"Badly."
He reaches out for Patsy, who has apparently decided at this point that any breast will do. Her little fingers keep returning determinedly to my top. "Yeah, the leather jacket probably slows down your return volley." I hand him the baby. He gives me a mock salute.
"Sailor Supergirl and smartass. Nice."
Just then, a Jeep pulls into the driveway very fast. Alice slams out, reaching back to disentangle her purse strap from the gear shift and yank her purse to her. Her hair at the moment is electric blue, pulled into a side ponytail. She's wearing a black halter top and very short shorts. "You know the score, Cleve," she snaps at the driver of the car. "You knew where you stood." She straightens, stalking over to the kitchen door and slamming it behind her. Unlike her brothers, she's small, but that does nothing to deflect from her unmistakable air of authority. Cleve, a mild-looking guy in a Hawaiian print bathing suit and a pack sun shirt, does not look as though he'd known the score. He slumps behind the wheel. Joel hands Patsy back to me and goes over to the car.
"Bummer, man,"
he says to Cleve, who tips his head in acknowledgement but says nothing. I return to the sprinkler and sit down. George plunks down next to me.
"Did you know that a bird-eating tarantula is as big as your hand?"
"Jace doesn't have one of those, does he?" George gives me his sunniest smile.
"No, he used to have a regular tarantula named Agnes, but she..."
His voice drops mournfully.
"Died."
"I'm sure she's in tarantula heaven now," I assure him hastily, shuddering to think what that might look like. Mrs. Garrett's van pulls in behind the motorcycle, disgorging what I assume are Duff and Andy, both red-faced and windblown. Judging by their life jackets, they've been at sailing camp. George and Harry, my loyal fans, rave to their mother about my accomplishments, while Patsy immediately bursts into tears, points an accusing finger at her mother, and wails,
"Boob!"
It was her first word. Mrs. Garrett takes her from me, heedless of Patsy's damp swimsuit. There's one for the baby book.
Chapter 9. With Mom and Tracy both out, the house is so quiet at night that I can count the sounds. The whir clunk of ice dropping from the ice machine into the freezer bin. The shift of the central air from one speed to another. Then, a noise I don't expect as I'm lying in my room at about 10 o'clock that night, wondering if I should say anything to Mom about that woman with Clay. It's this rhythmic bang, bang, bang sound outside, below my window. I open it, climb out, looking down to find Jace, hammer in hand, nailing something to the trellis. He looks up, nail between his teeth, and waves. I'm happy to see him, but this is a bit odd. What you doing?
You have a loose board here.
He takes the nail out of his mouth, positions it on the trellis, and begins hammering again.
It didn't seem safe.
For me or you?
You tell me.
He gives a final knock to the nail, puts the hammer down on the grass, and in seconds has climbed up the trellis and is sitting next to me.
I hear you've been engulfed by my family. Sorry about that.
It's fine. I sidle back a little. I'm again in my nightgown, which seems a disadvantage.
They're the best thing I've got, but they can be a little...
He pauses as though searching for a definition.
Overwhelming.
I'm not easily overwhelmed. Jace gazes at me, those green eyes searching my face.
No, you wouldn't be, would you?
It strikes me sitting there that I can be anyone I want to be with him. Then I notice something move on his shoulder.
What's that?
Jace turns his head to the side.
Oh, you mean Herbie?
He reaches up and pulls a squirrel, a rabbit, something furry off his shoulder.
Herbie?
Sugar glider.
He extends his hand, now containing a fuzzy thing that looks like a flying squirrel, with a big black stripe down its back and black shadowed eyes. I stroke its head uncertainly.
He loves that. Very tactile.
Jace moves his other hand over, so Herbie's cradled in between two palms. His hands are rough and capable. So much about Jace Garrett seems like a man, not a boy.
Are you, like, Dr. Doolittle or something?
I just like animals, do you?
Well, yeah, but I don't have a zoo in my room.
He peers over my shoulder in my window, then nods.
No, you sure don't. What a clean room. Is it always like that?
I feel defensive, and then defensive about feeling defensive. Generally, sometimes I...
Go a little crazy and don't hang up your bathrobe?
He suggests. It's been known to happen. He's sitting so close I can feel his breath on my cheek. My stomach flip-flops again.
I hear you're a superhero.
Yep, a few hours with your family, and now I have supernatural powers.
And you'll need 'em.
He leans back, resting Herbie on his stomach, then slanting onto his elbows.
Plus, you do back dives.
I do. Swim team. Jace nods slowly, looking at me. Everything he does seems so thought out and purposeful. I'm used to boys just sort of hurling themselves through life, I guess. Charlie was basically all about hoping for sex, and Michael, at the mercy of his moods, either elated or in deep despair.
Want to go for a swim?
Jace finally asks. Now?
Now, in our pool. It's so hot.
The air is muggy and earthy, almost thick. Let's see. Swimming, at night, with a boy who's virtually a stranger, and a Garrett. It's dizzying how many of my mother's rules this is breaking. 17 years of lectures and discussions and reminders. Think about how it looks, Samantha, not just how it feels. Make smart choices, always consider consequences. Less than 17 seconds to say, I'll get my suit. 5 minutes later, I'm standing in our yard beneath my bedroom window, waiting nervously for Jace to return after changing into his trunks. I keep peering toward our driveway, afraid I'll see a sweep of headlights, and it'll be Clay, driving my mother home,
finding me standing here in my black tankini, so not where she expects me to be. But instead, I hear Jace's quiet voice. "Hey," he says, walking up my driveway in the dark. "You don't still have Herbie, do you?"
"Nah, he's not a water fan. Come on."
He leads me back down and around my mother's 6-foot barricade, up the Garrett's driveway to their backyard, and over to the tall, green chain-link fence that encircles their pool.
"Okay," he says. "Are you a good climber?"
"Why are we climbing over? It's your pool. Why don't we just go through the gate?" Jace folds his arms, leaning back against the fence, smiling at me, a flash of white in the dark.
"More fun this way. If you're breaking the rules, it might as well feel like it."
I look suspiciously at him. "You wouldn't be one of those thrill-seeking, get-the-girl-in-trouble-just-for-kicks types, would you?"
"I would not. Climb over. Need a boost?"
I could use one, but would not admit that. I stick my toes in a hole of the chain link and climb up and over, clinging to the other side before dropping down. Jace is beside me almost immediately. A good climber. Naturally, I think, remembering the trellis. He snaps on the underwater pool lights. The pool contains several inflatable toys, something Mom's always lamenting. "Don't they know you're supposed to put these away every night, or the filter doesn't work? God knows how unsanitary that pool is." But it doesn't look unsanitary. It's beautiful, glowing sapphire in the night. I dive right in, swim to the end, come up for air.
"You're fast," Jace calls from the middle of the pool. "Race?"
"Are you one of those competitive, beat-the-girl-in-a-race-just-to-prove-a-macho-point types?"
"You seem," Jace observes, "to know a lot of annoying people. I'm just me, Samantha. Race?"
"You're on." I haven't been on the swim team for a year. Practices started to take too much time away from my homework, and Mom put her foot down. I still swim when I can, though, and I'm still fast. He still wins. Twice. Then I do at least once. After that, we just paddle around. Eventually, Jace climbs out, pulls two towels from a big wooden bin, and spreads them on the grass. I collapse onto one, staring up at the night sky. It's so hot, the humidity pressing down on me like fingers. He lies down next to me. To be honest, I keep expecting him to make a pass. Charlie Tyler would have been reaching for the top of my swimsuit faster than Patsy, but Jace just folds one arm behind his head, looking up at the sky.
"What's that one?" he asks, pointing.
"What?"
"You said you were into stargazing. Tell me what that one is."
I squint to where his finger is pointing. "Draco."
"And that?"
"Corona Borealis."
"And over there?"
"Scorpius."
"You really are an astrophysicist. What about that one over there?"
"Norma." A bark of laughter.
"Honestly?"
"You're the one who had a tarantula named Agnes. Yes, truly." He rolls onto his side to look at me.
"How'd you find out about Agnes?"
"George."
"Of course, George tells all."
"I love George," I say. "Okay." Now his face is close to mine. If I were to raise my head and tilt over just a bit, but I will not, because there's no way I'm going to be the one who does that. I never have been, and I'm not starting now. Instead, I just look at Jace, wondering if he'll lean any nearer. Then I see the sweep of headlights pulling into our circular drive. I jump up. "I've got to get home. I've got to get home now." My voice is high, panicky. My mother always checks my room before she goes to sleep. I run over to the chain fence, bang through the gate, then feel Jace's hands at my waist, lifting me up so I'm nearly to the top of our tall, slippery one, close enough to throw one leg over.
"Easy, you'll make it. Don't worry."
His voice is low, soothing. Probably his calm the nervous animal voice. I drop down on the other side and am running for the trellis.
"Samantha!"
I turn, though I can only see the top of his head over the fence.
"Watch out for the hammer. It's still on the grass. Thanks for the race."
I nod, give a quick wave, and run. Chapter 10. "Samantha! Samantha!" Tracy comes hurtling into my bedroom. "Where's your navy blue halter top?" In my drawer, Trace. Why ever do you ask? I respond sweetly. Tracy's packing to leave for Martha's Vineyard, half an hour before Flip's picking her up. Typical. She regards it as the right of the firstborn to co-opt any articles of my clothing she fancies, as long as they're not actually on my back at the time.
I'm taking it, okay? Just for the summer. You can have it back in the fall, promise.
She yanks open my bureau drawer, scrabbling through clothes, pulling out not only the blue top, but a few white ones. Right, because fall is when I'll really need the halter tops. Put those back.
Come on, I need more white shirts. We'll be playing tons of tennis.
I hear they may even have stores on the Vineyard these days. Tracy rolls her eyes and shoves the shirts back in, whirling to return to her room. Last year she taught tennis at the B&T, and I'm suddenly conscious that it will be weird without her there, too, not just at home. My sister is, for all intents and purposes, already gone.
I'll miss you,
I say, as she whips dresses off hangers, shoving them helter-skelter into a suitcase of Mom's, not at all bothered by the prominent GCR monogram.
I'll send you postcards.
She opens up a pillowcase, striding into the bathroom. I watch as she sweeps the hair straightener, curling iron, and electric toothbrush off the counter into the sack.
I hope you won't really miss me, Samantha. It's the summer before your senior year. Forget Mom. Bust loose. Enjoy life.
She waves her birth control compact at me for emphasis.
Ugh. I so don't need a visual aid for my sister's sex life.
Shoving the compact into the pillowcase, she knots the end. Then her shoulders sag, her face suddenly vulnerable.
I'm afraid I'm getting in too deep with Flip. Spending the whole summer with him, maybe not smart.
I like Flip, I say.
Yeah, I like Flip too, she says shortly, but I only want to like Flip till the end of August. He's going to college in Florida. I'm headed to Vermont.
Planes, trains, automobiles? I suggest.
I hate that messy long-distance stuff, Samantha. Plus, then you wonder whether he's got some girl on campus that you don't know about, and you're making a fool of yourself.
Have some trust, Trace. Flip seems pretty devoted. She sighs.
I know, he brought me a magazine and a froze fruit at the beach the other day. It was so sweet. That was when I realized I might be getting in too deep.
Oops. Can't you just see how it all goes? Tracy's smile is rueful.
I seem to remember that when you were dating Charlie, you had some sort of timetable for every move you'd let him make.
Charlie needed a timetable, or he'd have tried for sex in his dad's Prius in our driveway before our first date. She chuckles.
He was a total hound, but great dimples. Did you ever actually sleep with him?
No, never. How can she forget? I'm kind of hurt. I remember every detail of Tracy's love life, including that traumatic summer 2 years ago when she dated three brothers, breaking two of their hearts and getting hers thoroughly broken by the third. Flip honks from the driveway, something Mom would generally deplore, but somehow puts up with from him.
Help, I'm late, gotta go. Love you.
Tracy tramples down the stairs, loud as a herd of elephants in tap shoes. I've never understood how my petite, slender sister can make so much noise on the stairs. She throws her arms around Mom, squeezes her a second, dashes to the door and shouts,
"Coming, Flip! I'm worth waiting for, I promise!"
"I know, baby doll,"
Flip calls back. Tracy runs back to me, kisses my cheek noisily, pulls back.
"Are you sure about the white shirts?"
"Yes, go," I say. And with a twirl of skirt and a slam of the door, she's gone.
So there's an SAT test prep at Stony Bay High this August, Nan says, as we walk to the B&T. We stopped at Doan's and she's slurping her cookies and cream milkshake while I crunch the ice of my lime Ricky.
Be still my heart. It's summer, Nan. I tip my face up to the sun, take a deep breath of the warm air. Low tide. The sun-warm scent of the river.
I know, she says, but it's just one morning. I have the stomach flu when we took them last time, and I only got 1900. That's just not good enough. Not for Columbia.
Can't you take it online?
I like school and I love Nan, but I'd just as soon not think about GPAs and test scores until after Labor Day. It's not the same. This is proctored in everything. The conditions are exactly like the actual test. We could do it together. It would be fun. I smile at her, reaching over to snag her milkshake for a taste. This is your idea of fun? Couldn't we just swim in shark-infested waters instead? Please, you know I get totally freaked out about these things. It would help to practice under real circumstances. And I always feel better knowing you're there. I'll even pay your fee. Please, Samantha? I mutter that I'll think about it. We've reached the B&T, where we have to fill out paperwork before we start work. And there's another thing I want to do, too. I'm sweating slightly as I knock on the door of Mr. Lennox's office, peering around guiltily.
Do come in,
Mr. Lennox calls. He looks surprised when I poke my head in.
Well, hello, Ms. Reed. You do know your first day isn't until next week.
I enter the office and think, as always, that they should get Mr. Lennox a smaller desk. He's not a tall man, and it looks as if the massive slab of carved oak is swallowing him whole. I know, I say, sitting down, just filling out the paperwork. And I was wondering, I'm hoping to get back on the swim team this year, so I want to train. I wondered if maybe I could come in an hour early before the pool opens and swim in the Olympic pool. Mr. Lennox leans back in his chair, impassive. I mean, I can use the ocean and the river, but I need to get my timing down, and it's easier if I'm sure how far I'm going and how fast. He tenses his fingers under his nose.
The pool opens at 10 a.m.
I try not to let my shoulders slump. Swimming with Jace the other night, competing, even in a casual way, felt so good. I hated giving up swim team. My grades in math and science dipped to B's midway through fall semester, and so Mom insisted. But maybe if I up my time and try really hard. Mr. Lennox continues.
On the other hand, your mother is a valuable member of our board of directors.
He moves his fingers away from his face enough to show a tiny smile.
And you yourself have always been a most satisfactory employee. You may make use of the pool, as long as you follow the other rules. Shower first, use a bathing cap, and do not let another soul know of our arrangement.
I jump up. Thank you, Mr. Lennox. I won't, I promise. I mean, I'll do everything you say. Thank you. Nan's waiting outside when I emerge. When she sees my smile, she says, You do realize that this is probably the only time in his entire existence that Lennox has colored outside the lines? I don't know whether to congratulate him or keep pitying him. I really want this, I tell her. You were always happier when you were swimming. Nan agrees. And a little out of shape now, maybe, she adds casually. It'll be good for you. I turn to look at her, but she's already a few steps away, heading back down the hall. I have the late shift at Breakfast Ahoy the next day, 9 to 1 instead of 6 to 11. So I decide to make myself a smoothie while Mom frowns at her phone messages. This is the first time I've really seen her in days. And I wonder if now's the time to tell her about Clay. I decide I will, just as she snaps her phone shut and opens the refrigerator door, tapping her open-toed sandal on the floor. Mom always does this in front of the fridge, as though she's expecting a bowl of strawberries to shout, "Eat me," or the orange juice to jump out and pour itself into a glass. Tap, tap, tap. This is a favorite technique, too. Silence so loud someone has to start talking to fill it. I open my mouth again, but to my surprise it's Mom who speaks first.
Sweetheart, I've been thinking about you.
And the way she says it, I just can't help myself. About my summer schedule, I ask, and instantly feel guilty for the sarcasm under my words. Mom takes a carton of eggs out, stares at it, returns it to the refrigerator.
That, certainly. The election won't be easy. It's not like the first time I ran, when my only opposition was that crazy libertarian man. I could lose my seat if I don't work hard. That's why I'm so grateful for Clay. I need to concentrate, and I know you girls are taken care of. Tracy,
more foot tapping.
Clay thinks I shouldn't worry. Let her go. She'll be off to college in the fall, after all. But you? How can I explain this in a way you'll understand?
I'm 17. I understand everything.